Yeah, this time we're going to go ahead and call to order on our internal affairs meeting for today, Thursday, November 14th. And we'll go ahead and take up item number one.
Good morning again, Commissioners. Jim Polk on behalf of staff. Item number one this morning addresses a draft 2013 annual Lifeline report, which was prepared in accordance with requirements of Section 364.10 Florida statutes. By December 31 each year, the Commission is required to report to the Governor, President of the Senate, Speaker of the House of Representatives on the number of customers subscribing to Lifeline service and the effectiveness and procedures to promote participation in a program. As of June 30th this year, 918,245 households participated in Florida's Lifeline program, representing a 45% participation rate of eligible households in Florida. Staff is requesting the Commissioner's approval to submit this report and is prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for compiling the report. It looks like that although the eligibility is increased in Florida due to SNAP, participation levels have declined. And the question that I'm curious about is, do you think that this trend is going to continue to move forward? And if so, also, what impact does that have on the Lifeline program going forward?
Commissioner, the drop in the eligible households this year actually originated from the new FCC recertification and certification procedures, which went into effect. What we do, and you have it on page 7, disbursements, which is a good indication of exactly how many based it on that particular month that USAC dispersed to the eligible low-income ETCs in Florida. For the last, this particular chart goes up to June. Staff, every single month, stays on top.
I'm sorry, did you say eligible or did you say actual participants?
Participants,
yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. And staff continues to monitor USAC disbursements. As of the most recent disbursements, which just came out October of 2013, eligible participants in the program that are receiving Lifeline went up to 980,000. There has been an increase in the last 9 months, every single month, in Lifeline participation in the program. So what we're seeing, based on the question you asked me, we're seeing a continual rise, and that's why we expect Lifeline to continue to grow in the coming year.
Okay. Thank you. I was a little confused by that. I thought there was actually a drop, a decrease in participation in the program.
There was from the previous year,
2012.
From 2012 to 2013. What has happened since then, due to the recertification and so forth, is Florida lost a number of customers that didn't recertify. And since that point in time, the last 9 months, there's been an upsurge every single month in people qualifying and participating in Lifeline.
And so you think that trend is going to continue to increase participation?
Yes, staff believes that that is a trend that will continue.
Excellent. Thank you for your
thoughts. You're welcome.
Okay, any further comments or questions on this item? I want to thank you all for the report, and I want to thank particularly Ms. Thelma for the hard work that goes into ensuring that people are aware of the program. I had the opportunity of participating at least in one event here in Tallahassee to help people understand the eligibility requirements and that the program is available. And serving on the USAC board, one of the things that the board is very cognizant of and concerned about is ensuring that the appropriate people are the ones that are receiving the service, and that as many people as possible receive the service as well. So thank you all for your efforts.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, move approval.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Going on to number two.
Thanks, Chairman. Commissioners, item two is you've been provided with suggested modifications to the APM on specifically the section that grants administrative authority to staff on certain matters. Most of the changes you've been provided, type and strike, most of the changes are minor edits and renumbering and so forth, but there are two substantive changes. The first is to add or rather include language that provides for administrative approval for late payments and insufficient fund surcharges for water and wastewater utilities subject to conditions. And the second substantive change adds new language granting staff administrative approval for administrative changes to program standards for electric utility conservation programs.
All right, commissioners, questions, comments? Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, and thank you, Braulio, for bringing this to our attention. I have questions on page 4 and 5 regarding those substantive changes. And more of a clarification, the first at the bottom of page 4, staff's proposal to delete that area under 5A, proposals to make obsolete or eliminate non-obsolete tariff offerings shall be presented to the commission. Can you provide some reasoning for striking that and taking that out of our authority?
Well, you'd already given us administrative authority to approve certain changes to tariffs, and we just figured that we believed that eliminating obsolete was so non. It's not even non-substantive. It's almost negatively substantive. It's not something. It's more than non-substantive.
Well, on the subsequent page under 4, it says to remove right. obsolete tariff offerings once all customers have discontinued service. So, I just didn't know why you also. I just.
I'm sorry. I'm not seeing. I'm not
on
seeing
page
the
5,
reference.
Subset.
Right.
Subparagraph 4. It was to remove obsolete tariff offerings once all customers have discontinued service.
I think the two refer to different drivers for it.
Okay.
When Jim, you want to? Jim signaling.
Jim Dean on behalf of staff, commissioners. The first one on that you referred to, proposals to make obsolete or eliminate non-obsolete tariffs. Non-obsolete tariffs are defined as tariffs where there are active customers still on them. So we could not do that anyway. So that's something we would only bring to your attention for a vote if we're going to eliminate a tariff where there's customers on it. So that we would do anyway. This is just unnecessary duplicative language of what we already do.
Great.
Now go to the next page. An obsolete tariff is one that there are no customers serving on it. So if the utility now has discretion to close that out, we would not bring that to your attention because there's no customers affected.
Makes sense.
So they are consistent.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That makes sense. Thank you for your clarification. Can I follow up on one more? The substantive provisions, including late payment charges and non-sufficient fund surcharges, as long as those costs do not exceed a similar charge in effect for another utility. I'm happy, Braulio, that you said that these are for water and wastewater utilities, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that it was specific to any particular industry. Just said to any other utility, and I also wanted to know what would be a similarly sized utility or just any utility? Because the way, first of all, I didn't know it applied to just wastewater and water.
Yes, ma'am, this is just for wastewater, and we took out the language as as based on recent commission decisions, because that's kind of ambiguous. How long is recent? And so there's a benchmark that you can't go above it higher than any existing tariffs, and they have to be cost justified too. So they can't just, if their cost is not as high as the highest one, they can't get the highest charge. They have to show the cost basis.
That makes sense. But again, I didn't know that that just was with regard, I don't see anywhere in that subparagraph that it applies just to water and wastewater.
Oh, the fourth sentence, fourth line down under six, for a water or wastewater as well.
There you go. Thank you. Okay. I didn't see it. The other thing
not
is,
in red.
Which does not exceed a similar charge in effect for another utility, is your intent for any size, class A, B, or C?
No, ma'am. I don't think there's a reason. No, I don't think it's applicable to any size utility. It can apply to A, B, or C, subject to check. I think it's across the board.
Across the board. So it doesn't matter. If a Class A charges a late payment, a Class C can charge that as long as the costs are justified.
Right. It's not based on a similar situated size or class utility.
Okay. What's the intent behind that?
The non-sufficient funds charge is permitted in the statute, and so there is some language in there that defines those limits. I can't remember,
Commissioners,
to be honest, the late payment charge.
I think the way the language functions is, since the intent is always to bring you controversial items, I think you see a lot of that in the language. Whenever you're doing something new, i.e. a charge that is higher than anyone else is charging, that almost qualifies as such. You're doing something new and different. The administrative authority has always been to do the routine things, the things that are non-controversial. And we saw the language as functioning as sort of a trigger. Yes, it has to be cost-justified, but it should remain in your hands whether you want to approve a charge, whether you're breaking new ground on a charge. And in that way, we kind of guard against what I would call charge creep. You know, you get rid of the argument that, you know what, everybody else is charging it, and it kind of builds on itself, so you don't find yourself one day just having to approve higher charges because everyone else is doing it. So you've got the binary. You got two safeguards there. They have to be cost-based, but also it should be in your final decision whether you're going to let the overall charge grow to something that's never been
thank
seen
you.
Before.
Thanks. And Mr. Dean, thank you for clarity, too.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks.
Commissioner Balbus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, I know recently, I believe it was for an electric utility, the late payment charge was a significant issue, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with delegating that authority to staff on specifically those two items. I'm okay with the strikeout of the are the same as recent commission decisions and then the additional protections of cost justified and doesn't exceed, but I'm not comfortable with adding late payment charges and non-sufficient fund charges, and so I would request that to be stricken out. I don't know if my other commissioners agree. I think that's something that has been an issue with electric utilities. I know this is water and wastewater, but I don't see any harm in bringing that to us just for an additional check.
Okay. Commissioners? Commissioner Graham?
It's one of those things, so as far as I'm concerned, I was fine with staff recommendation, but if it means something, then I don't have any reason to stop it. If it means something to Commissioner Balbus, I have no reason to stop it coming to us.
Clearly, commissioners, these are just suggestions, and I think the point is for you all to have a level of comfort. It doesn't affect the process going forward. I mean, if you feel more comfortable deciding those, that's perfectly fine.
All right, commissioners, any further comments on that particular language with respect to late payment charges and non-sufficient fund surcharges?
If it's of any reassurance, commissioners. There are a number of fairly standardized miscellaneous service charges which staff has already been endowed with administrative authority over, and I would align these types of charges, especially non-sufficient fees, which are statutorily based, and there's typically not really any discretion involved there. And I certainly welcome staff's thoughts, but in my experience with water and wastewater, you tend to see a greater uniformity in the amount of the late payment charge. I don't know with electric how uniform it may be, utility to utility, but typically that is a fairly standardized charge as well. But if it is the commission's preference to leave those two charges out, certainly has the discretion to do so.
All right. I think we've had good discussion. Commissioner Balbus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we're in a proper posture for a motion, I would move to approve the revisions to the administrative procedures manual with the words late payment charges and non-sufficient fund surcharges stricken from paragraph 6 on page 5.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further comments? All right, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, commissioners.
Anything else with respect to this item? All right, thank you. Moving on to number 3, legislative update.
Good morning, commissioners. Just a couple of updates. This morning, the next scheduled round of legislative committee meetings is the week of December 9th, I believe, 1 week after the Thanksgiving holidays. We do not have schedules yet, but we will let you all know just as soon as we do. The other thing I wanted to mention is the bill that I talked to you about at the last Internal Affairs meeting, Senate Bill 272 by Senator Simpson, which has to do with the rates that an investor-owned water or wastewater utility charges as opposed to what the local government may charge in the same county. We have yesterday sent that bill analysis to the Senate, and we copied you all on it, so that one we have finished our staff analysis on that bill, if there are any questions.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Baez.
No report.
Okay. Anything on other matters for today? All right, seeing none, we stand adjourned for internal affairs.